one who leads you. Just like the song said, right? So now, Joshua, Judges, chapter 1. So we're going to see how they did with this. Oh, one thing I should say too. So as they went in up to this point, they went in as a nation and they did all this conquering. Of course, God being the conqueror, but obeying God. They did it together as a group. And God intended them now to start dividing the nation up into the tribes, and they would get their territories and things. And the individual tribes were now to go in and conquer the cities that were in their territory. And so each tribe was now responsible for continuing this battle against the Canaanites and taking over the land as God had promised. It's their land. The Canaanites shouldn't be there anymore, and they should be driven out and destroyed, just as he said. So let's see how they did. Judges chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. After the death of Joshua, the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, "Who shall go up first against the Canaanites to fight against them?" The Lord said, "Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand." So they did the right thing. They're inquiring of the Lord, and he says, and they say, which nation should go first, or which tribe, I'm sorry, should go first? And he says, Judah. And sure enough, Judah says, all right, we're going to do this. So we're going to look at some of that conquering, some of the great battles. Skip down to verse 5. They found Adonai Bezek at Bezek and fought against him and defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Adonai Bezek fled, but they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. That's a unique way to conquer him. And Adonai Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off used to pick up scraps under my table. As I have done, so God has repaid me. And they brought him to Jerusalem and he died there. So this Adonai Bezek, okay, he was a tough king. He was accomplished in his battles and he had conquered 70 other kings. So here's a very strong enemy, a strong foe. And they go in and they conquer him. And they do the same to him that he's been doing to all these kings. I wonder why he cut off the big toes and thumbs. What would that do? It takes away the strength for those kings to even consider fighting back. And it shows his power over them. Well, God shows his power now over even this great king who's been conquering all these other nations around him and does the same to him. And now he cannot fight back the Israelites. Keep that in mind. That's something that'll come back for us. It makes sense to us that God has more power than this king, so that's very good common sense. The next, verse 8. And the men of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it and struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. So that's a good thing. And afterward, the men of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who lived in the hill country, in the Negeb, and in the lowland. And Judah went against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba. And they defeated Sheshai, Ahinam, and Talmai. I don't know if I said those right. But there's three names that he's mentioned, okay? So they've conquered Jerusalem, done a good job. Now they're after these three, and they've conquered them. Well, who are those three? And, you know, someone else again in my study was smarter than me. Over in Numbers, got my own papers in the way. And this is a good one to turn to as well. Numbers chapter 13 and verse 22. So this is back when they had sent in the 12 spies to spy out the land when they were about to enter the land. And we'll see what happens here. Verse 22, they went up into the Negeb and came to Hebron. So those names are the same that were mentioned in there as well. And then it says, Ahinam, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. So there's those three names mentioned. All we know in this verse is that they were the sons of Anak. Now let's see who Anak was. Skip down to verse number 33. And there, this is the spies speaking now as they came back to report to Moses. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak who come from the Nephilim. Nephilim, and we seem to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seem to them. These are the people of the giants, it was said. And whether that's truly giant, like Goliath, or whether that's giants in military, you know, power, you know, there's that debate that goes on. Doesn't matter to me. They scared those 10 spies enough to bring a bad report and say, we cannot take these people. And then God wasn't happy with that response, considered that sin, and sent them into the wilderness to wander for 40 years. So now we've got Joshua. What's he do? Goes against the giants, conquers the giants in whatever way they were giants. Same three that were mentioned. And we're seeing the great victory and the great faith that the people have. Cool stuff. And the victories continue. Verse 11. From there, they went against the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kiriath Sepher. And Caleb said, he who attacks Kiriath Sepher and captures it, I will give him Aksah, my daughter, for wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, captured it. And he gave him Aksah, his daughter, for wife. So trusting that God would give him victory, promises my daughter for wife. And so still, another good victory. We're going to read all the way. Let's see. Let's skip down to verse 17. And Judah went with Simeon, his brother, and they defeated the Canaanites who inhabited Zephath, and devoted it to destruction. Devoted it to destruction, just like God said. Did the right thing. Very good. Judah also captured Gaza with its territory, and Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. These are three of the five Philistine cities that were mentioned later on as being the strongholds of the Philistines. So he captured them. Remember the other city? He completely destroyed them. And these he captured. We're going to come back to that in just a second as well. Wouldn't it be great if we could stop the story right there and the rest of Judges wasn't written and we go, wow, faithful people, heroes of faith, we've got this. And now we're spiritual Israel, so yay us. We're doing good, right? Well, unfortunately, the story goes on. Verse 19. Verse 19. I turned two pages. Not that one. And the Bible was with the Bible. Not yet. And the Lord was with Judah, and he took possession of the hill country. Still good. But, a little bit of a big word there. Small word, but big. And we're going to see a few buts in this and how that changes things. But he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain because they had chariots of iron. Well, wait a minute. They've had victory over victory, conquering the giants that were too scary for the 10 spies, that stopped the people from wanting to conquer the land. They're conquering the unconquerable, right? They're doing it, and yet now iron chariots cannot. And when it says that, or could not drive out, I don't know if they went to try and didn't trust in God and so he didn't help them, or were they just scared and looked at the chariots and said, you know, oh no, we're not going down there. Iron chariots were like the state of the art. It'd be like us fighting a battle with swords against tanks or something, you know, or guns against tanks or something. So with them, you picture that, a sword and an iron chariot. By the time you get that sword near the driver of the chariot, you run over. You're done. So that's a scary thing to a man about to go into battle. So it does make sense, but maybe not the way it should be. Because we know that God is stronger than iron chariots, right? Verse 20 and 21. And Hebron was given to Caleb, as Moses had said, and he drove out from it the three sons of Anak. I don't know if that's looking back at that previous story, but either way, more giants, you know, there's the victory. Yay! We want some good news. But the people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. Now wait a minute. Jerusalem, we just read verse 8. And the men of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it and struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. That was a victory we were all proud of a minute ago. And now we've got the Jebusites living in that city and Benjamin is not driving them out. Well, that's just weird. So they came back. Apparently they left the city empty and now they're back. And now, on top of that, Benjamin won't drive them out. We're going to make application to all of that here pretty shortly. Let's see. Verse 22. The house of Joseph also went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them. And the house of Joseph scouted out Bethel. Now the name of the city was formerly Luz. And the spies saw a man coming out of the city, and they said to him, "Please show us the way into the city, and we will deal kindly with you." And he showed them the way into the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword. But they let the man and all his family go. And the man went to the land of the Hittites and built a city and named it Luz. That is its name to this day. Okay, seems pretty fair. You make a deal with the guy. You know, let's make a deal. If you're nice to us, we'll be nice to you. And it would be seem wrong to us to not carry out that promise. But what was the command? This is right in the heart of the promised land. What was the command? Make no treaties with them. Show no mercy on them. Utterly destroy them. Did they need this man to get into the city? No. He's a genius. That's perfect. Oh, man. Can you come up and finish? Out of the mouths of babes. That's awesome. Can't get over that. They didn't need that at all. And this man went to build a city. Now, I don't know. He went to the land of the Hittites. The Hittites were listed in those nations, right? And if you look at the map, they were in the promised land area that was to be conquered. They hadn't gotten there yet. But he went and built a city again, and now it becomes a city. And in my opinion, I'm thinking that might be, I couldn't find Luz, the new Luz. I found the old Luz, which is Bethel, but I can't find the new one. But in my opinion, it's in the promised land still. So he rebuilt that city. So as much as that didn't seem so bad, I would not have caught that. Again, my studies found that, and somebody else pointed that out to me, and very helpful. Let's see. Well, I made a little note. It says, after all, what's one family out of so many? If they destroyed the rest of the city, it's just one family. And yet they went and built a big city. Another point we need to hang on to our minds. It's back. Okay, so in all three of these buts, they start out with conquering, but incomplete or lacking the, you know, to finish God's command. Okay? And so we're going to see, I think that's one of my PowerPoints up there, isn't it? Unfinished something. I forget what I wrote. Unfinished faith. That's what that one is. All right, so verse 27. Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth-shean and its villages, or Taanach and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. For the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in that land. That reminds me of weeds. When you're going after the weeds. This is a rainy year we had and the weeds are taking off. Try not picking a few of those. And if they go to seed, I've got one in my, that always grows out front. And if I let it go to seed before I pick it, and you watch it, you pick it, and a million seeds drop off it right there, falling all the cracks and nooks and crannies. And you just know you planted a million little weeds. They're coming back. So they persist in dwelling in that land. Verse 28, when Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but did not drive them out completely. Feels like they're maybe thinking, well, these people can help us. They can help us, you know, build things and stuff. We've got to build these cities back. We conquer them a little bit, burn some stuff down. Maybe they can help us. Zebulun also did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron, or the inhabitants of Nahalol. So the Canaanites lived among them, but became subject to forced labor. And Ephraim, I skipped that, verse 29. Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. You see how the Canaanites are living among the Israelites now? The ones that were supposed to be completely destroyed, utterly, you know, devoted to destruction, are now living among them. So that's worse, right? We're getting bad. But it gets even worse. Verse 31. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akko or the inhabitants of Sidon or of Ahlab or of Akzib or of Helba or of Aphek or of Rehob. Great names. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites. Excuse me. The inhabitants of the land. Okay, wait a minute. Verse 32. Read it again. The Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Who's the inhabitants of the land now? The Canaanites are mentioned as the owners of the land, basically, right? And now the Asherites are living among them. That's a step up. I think that's on the PowerPoint, too. Sorry, Leto. Stealing all your thunder here. Where was I? And then verse 34, there. The Amorites pressed the people of Dan back into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the plain and in Shealbim. But the hand of the house of Joseph rested heavily upon them, and they became subject to forced labor. And the border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of Akrabim, from Selah and upward. I'm great with those names, you can tell, huh? So first of all, the Amorites, okay? They persisted in dwelling in this mount, right? And they pressed the people of Dan back to the hill country. Dan didn't want to go to the hill country. He planned on going where the Ammonites were. Now he's being told by the Ammonites, by the enemy, nope, not coming here. Just get back to your little hills over there. And so he's being told what to do. And again, I believe that's on the PowerPoint as well. Unfinished business and temporary victories and not much benefit. They've got some forced labor, things like that. But these irregularities of their following God's plan are not working too well for them. So the application for us. Turn to Jude 24. Jude verse 24. Now to him who is able to keep you from stumbling and present you blameless before the presence of his glory with great joy, to the only God, our Savior, through Jesus Christ, our Lord, be glory, majesty, dominion, and authority before all time and now and forever. Amen. And then in 1 Thessalonians 5:23, now may the God of peace himself sanctify you completely, and may your whole spirit and soul and body be kept blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. He who calls you is faithful, he will surely do it. Just like what Joshua said, not one word of promise will fail from God. He will surely do it. He is able to conquer sin, to conquer Satan. He has the power, and he can make us blameless. He can sanctify us completely. He can easily conquer Satan and give us the strength to drive sin out of our lives. Just like when they were obedient and when they were doing what they said, he gave them the strength to do it. In some of those battles, we saw that they didn't do anything and still won the battle. The story of Israel's battle for the promised land is recorded as an example for us to follow. It's like, you know, we always say that the Old Testament is a shadow of these good things that we are now under. And this is truly a shadow of the battle with sin that we deal with, entering into our promised land or our promised rest. look at the process of victory to failure. A promised victory. He promised the Israelites that they would have that land. They inquired of the Lord and did the right thing. They trusted in Him and followed His guidance and His plan. They had victory over the strong enemy that they shouldn't have been able to fight. They conquered giants. Now, if we start looking at sin in our lives and the same thing applies, we are promised a victory. We inquire of the Lord to find out what He wants, and we follow His plan, and we're on board. And so we want to know, what is it You want me to do, Lord? And so He tells us, and then He gives us victory over a strong enemy and takes away his strength to be able to fight back. God is that strong. Cuts off his thumbs and his big toes. He does that for us. Then we conquer giants in our lives. We become Christians and we tackle things. I remember when I became a Christian, there were some things that had to be tackled that were big, and they were too big for me alone, but God helped me do it. The problem is, if you think you're done, you're missing the finishing of the battle. You can't stop right there. Because Satan can seem too mighty, like those iron chariots. Like, I don't have the weapons needed to conquer these things, or the tools to fight. It's just too scary and too strong for me. But I did not drive out the sin in my life, maybe. Not interested in a battle like the Benjamites, or whatever they call them, in Jerusalem. They didn't seem to attempt to kick out the Jebusites. They didn't seem to try. They seemed to just, well, we'll just move in with them and, you know, hey, I'm going to take the front of the house, you get the back room. I don't know what they did, but they left them there, did not drive them out. And now sin starts living among the Christian. So you change some of these things up here. Still allowing sin to persist in my heart like Asher, and letting those live there. And like Asher, as time goes on, pretty soon now, we, instead of having some sin living with us, we start living with sin, living in sin. The progression gets worse and worse. Sin overpowers me and tells me where to go and makes it too hard for me to fight the battle. And so I run to the hills. Just like the Israelites, we have a part in hearing His call to totally drive out and destroy the sin from our hearts. We can't let one sin remain. We're supposed to kill them all. If we let the one sin, it comes back and it builds a city. And it becomes a legion. Tons of references come to mind, don't they? Sweeping the house and leaving it empty. When we let sin live on, we will eventually lose the strength or the desire to beat it. We can become like Israel, a community of Christians with just a little sin living among us. And then we feel guilty and we struggle even confronting sin because we have our own. Some will be stronger, some will be weaker, but with unfinished battles of getting rid of all of the sin in our lives. Satan is sneaky. The benefits are false. We think we can control it and make it our slave. I'm gonna take care of that sin. I just keep it over here and I keep it off the side. And that way I can use it for my benefit. And that's sneaky because it doesn't, look at what it led to. It didn't work. They ended up divided. A nation divided. And finally separated from their God until He called them back and brought them back. We know that God will do that for us. But if we're not careful as a nation or family of Christians and just letting the little seeds come in, that's all Satan wants, is just a corner and a little bit. And we can end up being divided because now we're not going to be there for each other. Not being enough help with each other. The ones that are strong. Remember Joseph's family, house of Joseph came in to rescue Dan in a way and put the Amorites under subjection. But he still didn't drive them out because it said he put them under slavery again. He was strong and he went to his rescue. And we can do that for each other. But if we're not careful, we're still incompleting, not finishing the task that was given to us to try to get these things out of our lives. It could divide us from each other and from God. And what a different story it would be for us if we continued to conquer. Just like the judges, the story got kind of rough toward the end, right? We see God come back and save, okay? And this isn't a call to perfection, although it needs to be an aim, and it's not an excuse to stop trying. We need to turn back to the Lord. And just like in the beginning when we were gaining victory over the giants, don't let the iron chariot scare you. God is stronger, and all we have to do is let Him lead us into battle. Well, I think that's enough for me. I really appreciate you guys listening. And it is neat to have that opportunity. And I guess I wouldn't trade it even for Mike's announcements, because I gained so much from that. And I hope if you got anything out of that and really have need, that as we stand and sing the song, that you come forward, that we can help you or confide in each other and strengthen each other. And this was very convicting to me, because you know, I think all our ears are burning on this, at least at some time in our lives. And I know some are stronger than others. But if we're not careful, we let that, you know, creepy weed in there, and it just wants to keep growing. So, you know, hopefully we keep working on it and do it for each other as much as you do it for yourselves. So thank you for that, and let's stand and sing the song this time.